This is an MP3 audio clip from the weekly People First radio broadcast.
CHLY 101.7 in Nanaimo.
Bernard Crespi, an evolutionary biologist at Simon Fraser University, has developed a theory with the help of Christopher Badcock, a sociologist at London School of Economics, that suggests a genetic tug of war could be behind mental disorders such as autism and schizophrenia. The theory has been described as one of the most important contributions to psychiatry since those of Sigmund Freud. It would change the way mental disorders like autism and schizophrenia are understood. Bernard Crespi joins us today to talk about his theory. Welcome to People First Radio, Dr. Crespi.
Thanks, Kevin.
You suggest that autism and schizophrenia are at opposite ends of a spectrum of mental disorders. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes. Now, probably the simplest way to think about it is to think about what the human brain does. And one of the main things that our brains do is allow us to engage in social interactions, such as the one that we're having now, at least over the phone. And so we interact socially with people. We look at them. We look at their faces. We look at their eyes. We think about other people. We think about what other people are thinking and maybe what they're thinking about us. And so there's considerable evidence, if one looks at different species of primates, that the bigger brain they have, the bigger social group they live in. So there's all this evidence that the brain has evolved in part for social interactions. That's one of the main things that the brain does, you know, especially in humans. And in autism, the way this fits in with the theory is that in autism we have that so-called social brain, the parts of the brain that are involved in social interaction in autism, those do not develop normally. So, you know, autism is characterized by lower levels of social interaction and less developed language and that sort of thing. And so that's sort of an underdevelopment of the social brain of humans. And then one can also think about overdevelopment of aspects of the social brain. So, for example, in autism, you have commonly autistic children will not develop language. And one can think of sort of overdevelopment of language as represented by auditory hallucinations, hearing voices in schizophrenia. In autism, kids don't develop what's called a theory of mind, so they don't tend to think of other people as having minds like they do, and they have a less developed sense of self. And then in schizophrenia, one of the important symptoms is paranoia and delusions of conspiracy, which is kind of you're overthinking that other people have minds. You're thinking that people are always thinking about you. And then the sense of self, which tends to be underdeveloped in autism, will tend to be overdeveloped in schizophrenia in the form of one of the other main symptoms, which is megalomania and delusions of grandeur. So what one can do is think about these two disorders in the context of both evolution and in the context of how the human brain develops with regard to social interactions.
So there's basically the spectrum, which includes at one end what you've described as an underdevelopment of the social brain, which you've linked with autism, and at the other end, an overdevelopment of parts of the social brain, which you've linked to schizophrenia.
Right.
Now, I'm wondering if you're perhaps about to go there in terms of describing your theory. I'm wondering if you'd tell us about the genetic tug of war, the battle, as it's been described, between the mother's and father's genes and these two opposites that you've just been talking about.
Right. Well, we need to put that in a certain context. Now, the article in the New York Times, they were selling newspapers, and they focused on the genetic tug of war, which is only one sort of mechanism. It's one important mechanism, but it's just one mechanism that can disrupt, that when that mechanism is disrupted, it can cause the social brain to basically develop in two different directions in an unusual way. So the theory itself is based, the core of the theory is that autism and schizophrenia are essentially opposites of one another. And one of the factors that can cause sort of opposite disruptions to the social brain is something called genomic imprinting. And there's other ways that you can have genetic disruptions to the social brain that can go in these two different directions. With imprinting, disruptions to imprinting, the outcome, the disruptions tend to be quite large, and so it's easy to see the effects. And so we've talked a lot about it because that's where a lot of the good evidence comes from. So imprinting just means that a gene is expressed in you depending upon whether it comes from your mother or your father. So you've got two copies of every gene. If a gene is imprinted with paternal expression, you will only express the copy you got from your dad. You won't express the copy you got from your mom. And if it's imprinted with maternal expression, then the copy you got from your dad is silenced in your genome. There's a little mark in the DNA that says, don't turn this on. And the copy you got from your mom is expressed. And genomic imprinting is it's a process, and it's found in all mammals. And the evolutionary basis for imprinting has to do with genes, the paternal genes and the maternal genes, essentially having different evolutionary interests, because it's the mothers that invest most of the energy in producing offspring.
So the genetic tug of war that was described in the article in the New York Times, as you've said, is just one mechanism that can disrupt
right.
the social brain.
It's a very important mechanism, but it's only one mechanism. So we have evidence for these effects of imprinting. And because imprinting involves, you've only got, normally you just have one copy of a gene that's expressed. Well, what can happen is that you can have a little disruption so that you have either no copies expressed or two copies expressed. And those are big alterations, because these are very important genes that have very large effects on development of the body and also of the brain. So you have these big alterations that can happen that can go in two opposite directions, and the genes are expected to have effects on social interactions.
You're listening to People First Radio. We're discussing a new theory of brain development that would change the way mental disorders like autism and schizophrenia are understood. Bernard Crespi, a biologist at Simon Fraser University, developed the theory with Christopher Badcock, a sociologist at the London School of Economics. Dr. Crespi, you and your co-researcher have been described as outsiders to the field of behavior genetics, and I'm wondering if you could talk very briefly just about how your work developed.
How we got into it?
Yeah, how did you come to this point where you proposed this theory?
Right. Right. Well, yeah, it's a bit of a long story.
Yes, I'm sure.
I study social behavior, and I studied social behavior in various animals for many years. Mm. So I'm very familiar with the theory, the evolutionary theories regarding social behavior. And all of that theory is the same in humans as it is in animals. So I was kind of primed to get into this. And I think it originally started when I got an email from Chris Badcock, and he had suggested the idea of imprinting effects in autism, because paternally expressed imprinted genes are expected, if you have a bias towards them, they're expected to make individuals sort of more selfish in a very general sense. And the word autism itself means sort of self-oriented. And so this suggested this, that there could be a very strong link between, you know, social behavior theory and evolutionary theory and autism. And then, and because it's imprinting, well, it goes both ways, and so there should also be influences going the other direction towards schizophrenia. And so basically I took the theory and the work I've done on genetics from animals, and I carried that over to humans, and I spent 2 years teaching myself about mental illnesses. I had a fellowship that allowed me to do that. And then Christopher Badcock is an expert in aspects of psychology and psychiatry. So it was a wonderful collaboration, because he has psychology and psychiatry covered, and I've got genetics and evolution covered. And I think it actually has been useful coming to it from the outside, because you simply do not have preconceptions and biases about the way things should be. Because our theory is, it's really an absolutely radically different perspective on mental illnesses, because the whole idea that mental illnesses could be opposites of one another has not been suggested at all before. Mm.
And you've said, in fact, that the theory could have significant implications for various therapies for mental disorders. I'm wondering if you can, in perhaps this last minute or so we have, could you briefly just speak to that?
Well, the theory suggests that if you have a particular therapy or a particular pharmacological agent, a drug that has a certain effect and works in schizophrenia, then it dials up some receptor, and that makes delusions go away or whatever, then one should look at agents that dial down that same receptor, for example, as therapies for autism. And there are specific drugs and specific receptors where there is evidence of exactly that sort of therapeutic effect. So there are cases where one can say, okay, well, this is what we should do for schizophrenia, and the opposite works for autism. And so there's a huge amount of work on pharmacological therapy in schizophrenia, and one can take all of that work and start looking at it from the perspective of, well, if we take this drug or this receptor and do the opposite, then what are the expected effects in terms of the treatment of autism? It essentially allows you to understand and develop ways to treat both of these conditions together. Mm-hmm. And this there actually are agents which are in use or planned that are opposite pharmacological agents that are being used in autism, and then the opposite one is used in schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. And this has happened completely independently of these ideas, and it suggests that the ideas should lead directly to enhancements of therapies. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Matthew Belmont is a neuroscientist at Cornell University. He's quoted in the New York Times article about your theory as saying, It is, at this point, just a theory, but the idea is plausible, and it gives researchers a great opportunity for hypothesis generation, which I think can shake up the field in good ways. Is the theory shaking up the field?
Well, that's what I'm working on
yes.
now, certainly. Fields don't usually get shaken up very quickly. Fields have a huge amount of inertia, and extraordinary claims do require extraordinary evidence. And I've been gathering this evidence. The ideas are absolutely testable. That's one of the nicest things about them. We can make very clear predictions, and sometimes the data exists to test those predictions already. Data has been collected, you know, in other contexts. So it is, calling something just a theory is fine, but there is data that bears directly on it. And I think it's much more falsifiable than the majority of theories that have anything to do with these disorders. So that should lead to rapid progress anyway.
Thank you very much, Dr. Crespi, for taking the time to join us on air today.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dr. Bernard Crespi is a professor of evolutionary biology at Simon Fraser University.
People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Open Minds, Open Windows Society, both of Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of these organizations.